This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Matt.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Day, here's a Bruins minute for you. They make a trade today, which I'll get to in a second. How about starting with that victory yesterday in Calgary, Maz? Before I go, you have a thought on yesterday's game? You get a chance to watch it?
Yeah, just quickly. I thought, you know, the Bruins controlled the game right up until the point where Calgary scored to make it 1-1. And then all of a sudden, I thought Calgary got some legs, and I thought the Bruins were going to blow it, especially after getting their ass kicked over the weekend by Vancouver. Like I told you, I feel a slide coming. I don't think they've played great here for over a week now, for sure, but probably closer to two.
Yesterday was a good result, Maz, and they played well. Yeah, you know, and now it was the prettiest game. But, I mean, I'm with you. I keep expecting them to come back to Earth. Who wouldn't? They have the best record in hockey. They're pacing for the President's Trophy. So, of course you expect them to come back to Earth. You should expect them to come back to Earth. I'm expecting them to come back to Earth. Now's the time for it to happen. Around the trade deadline, you've established your playoff position. You know where you're going to finish. You almost know who you're going to play. It's like Toronto. Like, it feels like... You know, you go out west, funky start time yesterday, matinee on a Monday in Calgary after you got your ass kicked the night before in Vancouver. So it's like, okay, here you fall back to Earth, water seeks its level, this is coming. And they just don't do it. They won't do it. They came out, played really well in that first period, and then it was sort of a slog from there, back and forth. I thought Tuukka Rask was brilliant, maybe one of the better games he's played all season long. I thought the other goalie... In Calgary, I forget his name already, was
Riddick.
Out of his mind.
Riddick. I think it's Mike Riddick.
Tremendous goaltending on both sides. But this is just another little, you know, I've in the last, I don't know, Maz, couple weeks, there have been a half dozen nights where I say, okay, you know, this is probably a loss and they're coming back to Earth. It's going to, what goes up must come down. They're not this good. And pretty much in every one of those spots, they've come through and either won or looked really good doing it or... Again, I just thought yesterday was so important. Just the way they... You're out west, no one's watching, it's a Monday afternoon, and they corrected all that crap that they got wrong the night before in Vancouver, and the team impresses me. It's just impressing me the way that they're playing.
Look, they came out and squeezed the life out of Calgary early yesterday. I mean, Calgary couldn't get near the net. They couldn't, after giving up six goals the night before, and obviously Rask pulled. Like, the whole thing, I thought, okay, well, there's a commitment there. As the game wore on, though, I thought they were going to give it away. I once Calgary got that first goal, all of a sudden I thought...
Well, there were stretches in the third that they were all over the place.
Yeah, I thought Calgary got its legs after that goal. And then all of a sudden it's like, here you go. And then look, you know, Marchand ends up sealing it for him. They haven't had a lot of luck in overtime this year. So to get the result, no question. I still don't feel like they're playing great.
Okay. And Rask was not just good yesterday. He was great. That's one he stole you. So that's just on the state of the team. They continue to impress me. I mean, they really do. And so you got to take them seriously. Maz, they have not lost two games in a row in regulation since November, since the middle of November, since they benched Rask.
It's ridiculous.
It's been over 3 months since they've lost two games in a row in regulation. So it's like, I mean, you go into the playoffs and sure, you know, they're not going to sweep everybody, but the way it's gone is they've bounced back from every spot. They've bounced back from every rough spot they've had since Cassidy saved the season by benching Rask in the middle of November. I mean, basically, that's what happened. They've bounced back from every spot, have not lost back-to-back games in over 3 months, back-to-back in regulation. So that's just, I think they're really establishing what they are. And today, the front office goes out and sort of affirms that and says, you know, this is a playoff team and maybe a team that could be a deep playoff team, and we got to get enforcements. So they trade for a veteran defenseman by the name of Nick Holden. This is not someone that I am super familiar with. He's been on Colorado and the Rangers the last couple of years. The question is he a top four D-man? Is he a legit, you know, minutes-eating top four guy? And I've gotten different answers on that. He's a tweener. He's right in the middle, okay? He's, in his last two playoff seasons, he's averaged just about 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
For the Rangers last year, and then for Colorado a couple years before that, he was, I think, 19-plus minutes for the Rangers last year and over 20 minutes for Colorado in their playoff year a couple years before that. So if you're logging 20 minutes, you're a top-four guy. You're a top-four guy. Here's why I think they got him. He's a left shot, and he's big. He's 215, 6'4", 215. And when you look at the Bruins on the left side of their D after Chara, they've got Krug and Greslick, who are kind of the same guy. I mean, they're little, stocky, puck-moving, offensive-minded defensemen. And you get going in these playoff series where every, you know, freeze of the puck in front of the net is a scrum and a scrap, and guys are leaning on each other. And you're just a little too small on the left side, unless you want to bench Greslick and then play Miller on his offside, or, you know, you do something like that. I think there was a need there, not just depth-wise. I think there's a guy there that if the games get a little rough and Krug has had his problems, you drop him to the third pair, which is where he should be, and you've got a steady NHL guy on that left side to play next to Carlo, or I've heard it, you know, that he could play next to McAvoy, and then you have a left-right thing with the McAvoy pairing, and then you have Chara-Carlo together, which is that true defensive shutdown thing, which is what they used last year a lot and had good success with it. So he gives you not just depth but flexibility. He could be a real factor on this team down the stretch. He could see real minutes.
I mean, they needed a left-shot defenseman. There's no two ways about it. And, you know, I mean, I sniffed him out a little. It feels like he is really insurance for Greslick more than anything else. Like you said, they'll bump Krug down. They're not going to pull Krug, but they will bump him down, and Greslick will be the odd man out if he's not playing well or if he gets hurt.
So, I mean, my question is, what, you're going to acquire this guy and put him on the ninth floor? I hope he's not the seventh defenseman. This guy profiles a little higher than Greslick, who I like and has been a good story, and I don't want to dump on Matt Greslick, but he's, you know, again, I just think he's too redundant with Krug. I think they're too similar there, and especially when you're going in these series and it gets physical and guys start leaning on each other, you're a little light there on the left side. After Chara, it's two little fellas, and they're both, you know, Krug is a fire hydrant, he's stocky as hell and strong. I mean, I'm not telling you like they're wimps or anything, they're just, this kid's 6'4", 215. And again, he's no kid. He's 30, and he's been through some playoff runs, and he's been on a good Rangers team here the last couple of years. And I just think if this guy's sitting behind Matt Greslick, and he's on the ninth floor, then what are you doing this for? Why are you giving up a third round pick? Never mind Rob O'Gara, who I don't know, maybe he doesn't project here, but is sort of a tweener. He started the year, I think, last year with the Bruins. So if this Holden's going to be behind Greslick, Maz, why they make the trade in the first place?
No, I think they're going to play him. And I know you touched on the minutes earlier. Did you talk about just postseason minutes or regular season too?
Just postseason, but what is the average in the regular season?
Okay, so starting in 2013-14, okay, so the last five seasons, here's what he's averaged time on ice. 18-41, 19-48, 21-53, 20-37, and 18-59. So it's basically been anywhere from 19 to 22 minutes a game for the last 5 years.
That's, you know, that's right on the line of top 4 minutes to me. Like, that's, so to me, at least he's in your lineup. He's got to be. Otherwise, why are you giving away third-round picks and O'Gara? But, I mean, either. Why are you giving away those young assets and future assets for a guy who's not going to play? The guy has to play. So that's that. He's playing. Otherwise, the trade is stupid. If you're looking for a seventh defenseman, another guy to put up on nine, pick him off the waiver wire. You're not giving up assets for a guy to put up on the ninth floor.
So, look, I just wish he was signed for one more year. You know, look, it's a rental. He's up at the end of the season, I think, if I read that right.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so, I'd love them to have a veteran guy on that side who was around for a little bit longer, but whatever, I'm not going to bitch. They were in a spot to make a deal here because they've clearly overachieved, so they get some depth on the blue line, and he'll help them out, I think, if nothing more than a body, and they should be adding pieces here, and it doesn't feel like they gave up a ton, so I'm all right with
it. Okay, but this is what you should want. You should want this guy to be better than Krug. Or this guy to be a better option, maybe just given the style of playoff hockey, than Krug. You want Krug on the third pair, because that's what he is. If Krug is your third pairing defenseman, you're good on the blue line. That means you have got a good top four. That Krug can't crack the top four. Krug's a third pairing defenseman who plays on the power play and spot minutes otherwise. And this guy slots next to Carlo on that second pair, and that's when you know you've made a good trade. If this kid is not playing, then what the hell are you doing it for? And if he's playing behind Greslick, I say, what the hell are you doing this for? So that's when you know it's a good trade. If he supplanted Krug on that second pair and is getting more minutes than Krug come the postseason. In terms of the McDonough stuff, it feels like this sort of precludes that. Or anything else bigger. Rangers asking for Jake DeBrusk, Maz, reportedly over the weekend for Ryan McDonough. Would you do that if you were the Bruins? Give up Jake DeBrusk in any of these deals?
I told you I'd give up DeBrusk or Heinen, but not both. But my concern with McDonough is that if you make that kind of deal, you then have to sign him. because you're giving up a young player who's going to give you multiple years of service and pretty good ones at that. And so, you know, then you run into, can you sign McAvoy? Can you sign McDonough? Can you do that and retain Chara? Like, all of a sudden, you're playing musical chairs there a little bit.
Yeah, we talked about this on Friday for a minute, Mike, and I'm a no on DeBrusque. He's fast. He forechecks. He's got a good shot. He's tough. I don't move him for McDonough.
I don't either. I keep DeBrusque. I'd trade Heinen, but not DeBrusque. I just think they need... He's the only pick from that first round where you went 1, 2, 3 that looks like he can play, and I don't think you can afford to go 0 for that draft. It was just too important to you, and I think DeBrusque's upside is higher than Heinen. So I would entertain Heinen. I would not entertain DeBrusque on that. But either way, Bruins continue to win. They continue to establish themselves. All of the boo-hoo Tuukka crew. You want to talk about Tuukka and the Vezina? You can do it after last night. That's one game where you say, okay, that was a Vezina kind of game. I sort of throw my hands up on that. I'll let you have it, like I let you have the Bergeron MVP thing last week when he had that great game in the Garden. You want to toot the Tuukka horn? By all means, toot the Tuukka horn. And the Bruins have started to make moves. Is that a sign that they're going to invest in this team going into the postseason? So we got that on the board. We got a Red Sox conversation on the board. We'll get right back to it with your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
One fourth drum,
gonna run him right down their throat.
Felger,
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass,
who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The offseason has no deadline, so I know there's a lot of stuff going on out there, and that's as far as I can go. So everybody knows he's a good player. He's a guy that can impact any lineup, and we'll see. You know, that's all I have on that matter.
I was just wondering if you think the Red Sox leadership has been lacking over the past since David Ortiz has retired, because I see serious faces in there, not happy, like tenacity and all types of like David Ortiz-type vibe.
Big question mark. No question about it, Maz. I think it's been, you know, their second biggest issue behind power.
Yes. Yeah, look, there's been dysfunction in there, and everybody's admitting it now. You know, a year ago, they were resisting it. But to me, clearly, there's a problem in there. Now, does this guy alone, does Martinez come in and lead? I don't know. Is Price ready to be more of a good citizen than a pain in the ass? You got me. We'll see how it goes. Like, to me, new manager... healthy team, at least right now, and we'll see how it goes in camp. They should start fast. This team should start fast. If they don't, they'll get tested, and I'm not sure how they'll handle that.
Tender in Providence, you like the JD Martinez signing?
Love it. I don't understand why everybody's so negative about the signing. I think the guy really wanted to come to Boston, and I think instead of taking the 125, he ended up taking the 110 because he originally wanted to come to Boston. That's what I think. And plus, with Devers, him, and Hanley, 3, 4, and 5, I don't know what order you put him in, and with the other young catcher coming in, playing second base once in a while, the big first baseman, I think we're in good shape, to be honest with you, and I think our pitching will be able to neutralize those two big hitters in New York somewhat.
So, Tender, you think that J.D. Martinez left money on the table to come here?
Yes, I do.
From where?
Well, he wanted 125, right?
He wasn't going to get it.
He wanted 210. Well, Boris said 7 and 210 to start.
No, but then we offered him 125, and he didn't take it. Nobody else was out there to sign him, but I think he wanted to come to Boston in the first place. That's what I...
As your thought.
I don't think they ever offered 125. I think if they did, it would have still been on the table because the Red Sox clearly didn't back out of it. So, look, again, I don't know whether he wanted to come here or not. It doesn't feel like there were many other suitors. And if it's true that he got agitated a couple of weeks ago because the Red Sox weren't stepping up, well, then maybe he did want to come here. Why would he get agitated if he didn't want to come here? So, I don't worry about that part of it. I told you. And the contract? Fine. Fine. It's not a horrible contract. So he might be out of here in 2 years, might be three, might be five, but I don't think the 22 over five is the type of deal that will absolutely bury them. Oh, that's fine. I'm not bitching about the contract. I really don't know what the player is. I don't know. And I want to see it from my own eyes in that ballpark over a length of time before I determine whether he's the kind of talent that will change their lineup.
Here is Anthony in Medford. Anthony's up next with Felger and Maz. Do you like the signing, Anthony?
Yes, I like him, Mike. I mean, he's the best power hitter out there. He isn't a one-hit wonder. He had 45 last year. He had 23 in 120 games in 2014. He had 38 in 2015. They, like Matt says, they didn't overpay. He's the best power bat out there. I can't see people complaining about the sign. I like that trade a lot better than the Bruins. I'm mad they didn't go to McDonough. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, well, the Bruins didn't give up anything that's going to hurt him, I don't think. You've signed this guy for $20 million a year on top of David Price, on top of everything else. And we've seen this team will not go over its budget. In the last couple of years, they've stayed true to their budget. So there is a cost there. It means you won't be able to spend elsewhere. Do you worry, Maz and or Murray or Stu, that this gets in the way of them signing someone really worth it next year, whether it's Machado or Harper or someone like that?
I do. I mean, that's one of my concerns when this first happened. Again, it's a deal. It's a creative deal that is obviously front loaded. It doesn't hurt them all that much. But by doing this, I feel like it does hurt them potentially for Machado or Harper or even Josh Donaldson, who they could even make a trade for at the trade deadline. Like, those are real names to me. This guy's kind of a fluke. I mean, I know what the numbers are the last couple of seasons, and I know it looks like it's trending upwards, but really, prior to this offseason, had anyone around here really heard of JD Martinez? Like, be honest.
God, no. No, I hadn't, and that's no reason not to like it, but it sort of hammers home the fact that 4 years ago he's released, 3 years ago he's a nobody. He's been on four teams in 3 years. He goes on a huge power surge here in the last couple, including 29 homers in 62 games in a ballpark where the conditions are so hitter-friendly that they have to bring in a humidor to moisten the balls because they're little golf balls that are flying out of the park like it was the 1999 All-Star game at Fenway Park with those fake baseballs. I mean, I don't know how that doesn't just concern people. 3 years ago, he was making $3 million off a one-year deal in what should have been the prime of his career, 27 years old. Now he's 5-110. I mean, those guys just, that has got to scare you. We've got Dan in Boston on the state of the game and those pace of play rules. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, Tony, how are you supposed to look at J.D. Martinez if you got Felger over here eliminating the first two pitches of the batter opponent there? I mean, what are you trying to do, Felger? You guys are the types of people who are making these, as you call, fracocta rules. Yeah, they're not going to give you the pitching clock. They're not going to give you these things right away because they want to listen and toy around with the people who say the pace of play and dying this and whatever. Realistically, baseball is always going to be there, and people got to talk. Yeah, I'm not all for. We had John Farrell, who operated like the sands of time over here, had been trying to make a decision. But now that we actually have a decent manager who just won a championship on another team, you know, I think we're going to look at a different flavor, and I think it might look a little differently than your 3 hours and 20 minutes. Not to mention, you know, yeah, we do 3 hours and 20 minutes, but how many of those games are in prime time? How many of those clutch situations are up for debate? How many times do we got this guy going against this thing and this, that? I'm not,
not
enough. An AL team. We're not an NL team. You know, we don't need to do these double switches and
Danny,
think too crazily about it. But
Danny,
come on.
Dan, 320 on average is ridiculous.
The game moves too slow.
Every night, 320? Come on. That's I don't care how much you love the game, whether you love the game, hate the game, want the game to succeed, don't what 3 hours and 20 minutes. Maz loves baseball. He's devoted his life to it. Chris Mad Dog Russo is the biggest baseball guy you'll find in the national media. This isn't a baseball hater like me. If you think I'm one of those guys, these are people that invest in the game, and they can't take it. So talk to them. 3 hours and 20 minutes, Maz. Come on.
No, it's too slow. And again, look at the trend across the other sports. They have all made changes to speed up the presentation of the game. They've all made changes already. The NFL's made changes by eliminating commercial time. The NBA has eliminated timeouts to make the whole product move faster. Baseball, which has the biggest problem, has gone the other way. Last year was the longest ever. And why the commissioner is digging in his heels on this in terms of cooperating with the players' union is beyond me. Put the pitch clock in. Shove it down their throats. They will get it. Of course they're not going to like it. In 5 years, they'll thank you for it.
Pat in Boston has a Bruins thought for us. Hi, Pat. Hello, Pat. Okay, babe, obviously not ready to go. We have got, how about Steve in Taunton on the Red Sox and the J.D. Martinez signing. Steve in Taunton, let me just cue you up here in a second. Okay, Steve in Taunton, you're up next to Felger Maz. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, boys. How are you? Hey, I'll tell you, I kind of like the deal. First of all, you guys all have to agree with me. The Red Sox finished dead last in the American League in home runs. This guy can hit about 30, 35 home runs. Hey, you know what? It's a pretty good deal. The only thing I kind of worry about is what you guys were just talking about, is picking up another lucrative free agent down the road. That's my only concern. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so let me tell you this. I mean, if J.D. Martinez is a 45 home run guy, they don't need to pick up. So, you know, he fills that need. And so, you know, if he really works out and he's worth the money, then you're fine that you can't spend it on someone else. You don't need to spend it on someone else. Right.
Exactly.
It's just, what do you think the odds are that going to be? You know, free agent was just, the odds are not great on free agents across the board. National League to American League. I understand he was spent plenty of time with Detroit, but still, National League to American League, 30 years old, in a real hitters-friendly park to a less hitters-friendly. I mean, just what are the odds you think it is, or that, you know, that he's going to succeed? I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about, I know there's some previous caller asked it too, I'm not worried about the long-term ramification of them being able to go out in the market and get another player. You know, they're going to lose guys off of this team. Hanley's gone. Okay, they're not going to let Hanley get that, trigger that option. So that's $22 million right there. Kimbrell's another 13. That's 35. Pomeranz is making 8.5. Now I'm over 40. So, like, I think you can get rid of those three guys and go out and sign yourself Bryce Harper if you want. And you can plug those in some other way. Maybe Eduardo Rodriguez develops and he takes Pomeranz's place. A closer you should be able to find for less money than that. And Hanley, you're not going to miss him at all, for crying out loud. So, like, I think I'm not worried about the long-term implications of it. I'm worried about 2018. And given the wagons that are out there in the American League, Houston is loaded. The Yankees are loaded, and the Yankees have a guy that you should have been in play for in Stanton, but whatever, that one's gone. Do you have the firepower now to compete with those teams? I'm not sure that you do. I don't know exactly what J.D. Martinez is. I know what the numbers are. I know what the data tells me. I want to see him hit good pitching, and I want to see him hit home runs to right field at Fenway Park before I buy in.
Felger and Mazz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mazz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
There was a State of the League address by Adam Silver, or a press conference anyway, where he talked about reformatting the NBA playoff structure, Mazz. I just want to hit on it quickly because I think I love the idea. Silver wants, and has been talking about the last couple of years, and it feels like this is headed to critical mass, seeding the teams 1 through 16, East, you know, screwing East versus West. You know, what he originally wanted to do, apparently, was to just qualify the top 16 teams, regardless of conference. So it could be 10 from the West and 6 in the East. And I think he was talked out of that, that you still want 8 and 8, because there's an imbalanced schedule, and so to keep it fair, you want 8 and 8. But once you qualified those 16, he says, seed them 1 through 16, regardless of conference, and hand them play off. And I love the idea. How do you feel about it?
So the reseeding idea I like better than the idea of taking 10 from the West and 6 from the East. And I, you know, if that is out, then, I mean, fine, you know, firmly out, then I'm happy to hear that. And I think there's a lot of, because I kind of like the whole East-West thing. I think, you know, there is sort of a territorial thing about it that appeals to me. But I think in the NBA, all they really care about is the finals. I mean, to them, it's about the Final Four. That's it. And it's really about the finals. So if they end up with a dog final, they can't have that. I mean, to me, that's like the one time where they really have the stage. I don't think it's awful the way it is, but the idea of seeing, you know, Golden State and Houston in the final, and that's what we're really talking about, to me, given the problems in the East this year, is more appealing. I don't know how you get around that.
I love it. I love everything about it. I think it spices up the first couple of rounds. I'm not sure it's going to be any more competitive, but I don't know. Golden State going out and playing whoever, Detroit, Milwaukee. I don't know. I just think that adds just a little bit of spice to it. And then you, as you go on, the second round matchups, quarterfinal, et cetera, I just think there's a variety to it that I like. And it does set up certainly a better final, Mazz. You know, you're almost guaranteed to have a good final. If you know, especially when it's imbalanced like it is now with the good teams out West. So I think it's a tremendous idea. He spoke about it. He talked about one of the problems, which I didn't like. So I just, here's Adam Silver over the weekend on the 1 through 16 thing.
The obstacle is travel. And it's not tradition, in my mind at least. It's that as we've added an extra week to the regular season, as we've tried to reduce the number of back-to-backs, that we are concerned about teams crisscrossing the country. Having said that, you'd like to have a format where your two best teams are ultimately going to meet in the finals. And obviously, if it's the top team in the East and the top team in the West, I'm not saying this is the case this year, but you could have a situation where the top two teams in the league are meeting in the conference finals or somewhere else. So we're going to continue to look at that. And it's still my hope that we're going to figure out ways. Maybe ultimately you have to add even more days to the season to spread it out a little bit more to deal with the travel. Maybe air travel will get better. All things we'll keep looking at.
Air travel will get better? What, do you realize how these teams travel, Maz?
Oh, no, I don't think the travel is much of a deterrent at all. I mean, I know he's saying there is. But in the modern world, these guys can get there pretty fast now and pretty comfortably.
They're not sitting behind you in the security line, Maz, at Logan, behind the mother of three with the stroller who doesn't know what to take out of her pocket and takes 45 minutes out of your day because she can't figure out to take off her belt and her earrings or what. Like, that's not what these guys do. The travel's nothing. The planes are beautiful. They roll them right out to the plane. Like, it's nothing. So I don't want to hear about the in the first round, might you get a California team and a New York, you know, East Coast team? Yep. So instead of spending 3 hours in the air, they're spending six. They'll get over it. The way they schedule these first rounds, Maz, with the 2, 3, 4 off days between games, it's ridiculous. I don't want to hear about the travel. That's not the reason not to do this.
No, to me, the travel is totally dual. I told you, though, I like the East-West thing, but if it's 8-8, I think that works. The other thing is, you know, I don't think you can have a preponderance of West Coast teams, because I think what will happen is you'll lose the people in the East, and you'll also, you know, you're going to have games starting later. It's going to really complicate things in terms of TV, and I don't think the NBA wants to do that.
No. So, they, you know, like I said, he's already dismissed just taking the top 16 teams. It'll still be 8 from each, but seed them 1-16 and open the whole thing up. I mean, it's just, there's just more variety, different styles, it's sort of like the NCAA tournament where you're getting teams from different conferences and different styles of play facing off earlier in the tournament. I just think that'd be a great move for the NBA. I'd like to see them do it. So that's just your NBA thought from the weekend here on what amounts to a reentry Monday. Back to the phones. Joe in Dorchester on the Bruins. Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. Felger, I think you hit the nail on the head when we were talking about Rask earlier. I mean, we've gone back and forth, you know, before we both agreed on the Hudobin thing that he should be playing early in the year. But I think what we've seen this year, and you can correct me if you don't think I'm right, is that Tuukka is kind of maturing. And what I mean is he's playing on these back-to-backs, and he's not getting his butt kicked like he got in Chicago a couple years ago, sitting out the Ottawa game. I think we're seeing him play with a little more grit to his game this year, which I think is a really encouraging sign that maybe he can get hot in the playoffs and, you know, win you some games in a first-round matchup.
Okay, so maybe the coach got his attention, Joe, but I don't think we're going to know until the postseason. I've seen him put together good regular season runs. I've seen him win Vezinas. I've seen him do all these things. So, great. He's doing it again this year. Tremendous. He's a better goalie than Hudobin. No one ever said otherwise. So he's playing like it, and he's earned the time, and so great. All good. He's got to win rounds. You know, you can't go in there if it's Toronto in the first round, or you're facing, again, a beatable wild card if you happen to win the President's Trophy, and you're facing like a Carolina or a team like this who you should beat, and Rask isn't good enough to win that series. That, to me, it all comes down to that. He's got to win at least a round, probably more, for me to say he's worth the money and he's the goal that I've been told that he is. He's got to win in the postseason. Sorry. We've got George in Rhode Island. He wants to join us on the pace of play initiatives in baseball. 6 mound visits per game. Is it enough to speed up the game? George in Rhode Island, go ahead.
Yeah, it seems like a sketch for Saturday Night Live, the rules they got, where you can talk to the pitcher as long as you don't vacate your position, but they shift on every player, and then sometimes, even during the at-bats, they shift again. I mean, what kind of nonsense is that?
It's complete and utter nonsense, George. And the word that they used in the Herald story, and I think probably in the rules, is relocate. You're locating. Like, you're able to meet as long as you don't relocate. One exception allows for position players and pitchers to chat as long as neither one has to relocate. And then Master Donato in the Herald says the definition of relocate will certainly be debated. You relook. So what does that mean? They can get within the neighborhood. They can. You can take two steps off a second and two steps off the back of the mound, and you're not relocating, but you're like. They can allow that? What does that mean?
Well, again, it's a loophole. I don't know what it means. And you know the teams are going to exploit it, but he brings up a good point. The caller did. I didn't even think of that. With the amount of shifting that goes on, why not just have the second baseman run across the infield grass when he's moving over to the other side, or the, you know, the shortstop or whoever? Have him cut in front of the mound, and then the pitcher can step off the back and he can talk to him for 5 seconds while he's doing that. Like, you know they're going to pull that crap. They are totally going to manipulate the rule and take advantage of it. And the umpires aren't going to call them on it, and nothing's going to get fixed. When I saw the number of restrictions put on these things, and when I say restrictions, I mean that they say you only get 6 mound visits. But here are the exceptions. So I should say the number of exceptions. My head started to spin when I saw this over the weekend. I said, you can't make a rule and then give a team 5 exceptions to the rule. Like, it makes no sense whatsoever. This thing, it's not going to speed up the game. I don't see a significant change here. And I think, you know, I don't know if this is Manfred's ultimate way to get to what he wants, which is a pitch clock. But he introduced the pitch clock last year. He should have been able to unilaterally impose it now. And the players be damned. Like, the players aren't going to like it no matter when you do it. So do it now.
Did you read what the punishment is if they go over? Like, is there a ball or a strike called on the batter or pitch? Blah, blah, blah. Like, is there anything? What's the punishment?
You know what? I haven't seen that. I'm assuming it's a ball.
Or a talking to.
What does that mean? So, again, I
thought it was
7.
A fine.
So, let's see what those are. In baseball, they're like, you know, $150.
Well, they did do this, was it last year, Tony, or 2 years ago, where they fined players for being tardy to the batter's box, and then they got some pushback, they being... Major League Baseball got pushed back from the players and they stopped doing it?
Right, exactly. Manfred backed off and because some players have gotten letters for games that were under 245 or something like that. You know, the games in question had moved quickly, and so Manfred, you know, told everybody to back off. But again, if it's not about the time of game, which Manfred alleges, and it's about the pace of play, then what difference does it make what the time of game is?
Exactly.
Like, it's about keeping it moving. That's what it's about. And the only way these fat asses are going to move, because I know baseball players, is you have to force them. They're going to, you know, watch Hanley Ramirez go on and off the field.
Oh, please. Oh, please. I mean, that is some of the worst body language you'll see in sports. Hanley Ramirez deigning to jog off the field. That's painful.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Gut feeling, real quick.
Yeah.
Percentage, you believe that Rob Gronkowski is coming back?
Oh, I think it's 50-50 right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's up in the air. I think this is something he's legitimately thought about. We've seen the way that he's handled his money. And we've seen clues over the last few years in the way that his health has been handled. It's different than the way any other Patriot's health has been handled. As far as the flow of information, you know, where he's getting surgery, all those sorts of things. So clearly it's something that's been on his mind for a long, long time. And like Tommy Curran said, I think it's something the Patriots have to take very, very seriously.
All right, Bert Breer, thank you so much.
I think he's a little high. I mean, I think there's a better chance that Gronk returns, is the way I say that. I don't think it's 50-50. I think it's 70-30, 80-20, something like that. I think that Gronk's health concerns are real. I think there are real issues there. I think he's taken a lot of shots. And again, that hit that he took in the AFC Championship game, how many concussions has the guy had that we don't even know about? Like, I'm willing to bet there's more there than we even know. So I think it's real, but I think at the end of the day, he plays.
I think it's worse than 50-50. I take it totally seriously because I think his ability to earn off the field is real. I think he's invested a lot into that end of it. I think he cares about it. I think he's set himself up. And I think he's maybe smarter than we give him credit for. And I'm not telling you he's gone. I'm just telling you the odds. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 40-60 against that he's more likely to leave.
Is that informed speculation on your part?
Now, since when do I have informed speculation?
Yeah, I don't know. You're sneaky about that.
Not that sneaky. No, I have no informed speculation, just a gut. I mean, just based on, again, the things that he does off the field, I think he's put a lot into it and has a lot going on there. I really think he does.
Well, so, you and I didn't have a chance to talk about this because it came up on Friday again. There was that story that came out that indicated that the WWE was willing to sign him to the same kind of contract that they signed Ronda Rousey to, and Jimmy informed us she's making somewhere, they think, that that's a deal that would pay him somewhere around $5 million. $5 million? That's
and
real
that's
money.
And he can still act. He can still do his Nickelodeon show and his, you know, his endorsements and whatever little movie things he gets here and there. So that's just as a baseline. So yeah, I think his opportunities are real. I think it's a real issue for the Patriots, and to pay him the amount that it would take to get him to come back, is he worth it given the injury consideration? Like, at some point, can you afford to pay him like you do a top receiver, given the, you know, I mean, again, he was relatively healthy last year. He only missed two games. One was a suspension, but still, I think there's an issue there with Rob Gronkowski. All right, that's Patriots item number one. Patriots item number two is Malcolm Butler at a charity event in New Jersey over the weekend. I'm sorry, did I say Malcolm Butler?
You
I meant
did.
Devin McCourty. Devin McCourty, Patriots safety Devin McCourty on Malcolm Butler at a charity event over the weekend in New Jersey. Go ahead, Jimmy Stewart.
Do you want to talk about Malcolm Butler not playing or no?
I don't know. I'll talk about anything.
Okay, so Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
What the heck?
It was tough. You know, I think the whole week we knew the game plan was he wasn't going to start. You know, but once he didn't get in, I thought, you know, obviously it could have helped us, you know, and I thought personally that was tough for him, you know, to sit there. Obviously, he played, I think, over 95% of the defensive snaps, and to not play at all in the biggest game, you know, I think is tough personally for any individual, whether it was injury, whether it's coach's decision. Anytime you can't get in there, you want to be in there and help. So I know that was tough on Malcolm, but I got a chance to talk to him after the game and, you know, just tell him what he's meant to me as a teammate and as a friend. And whatever he chooses to do in the future, I think he knows. He has everybody in that locker room support. We know, you know, what he's been. And you know, I thought the worst part of everything was all the rumors that came out.
Right.
That were, I don't know where they came from, but no, like I've never heard, you know, the whole week that he was late or anything.
Partying,
so
yeah, well,
I hate it for him as far as his character to see that come up and it to be false. And now there will be a ton of people who just believe it because he came up.
Right.
Okay, so two things. One, we knew all week he wasn't starting. That's one piece. And then the second piece to me, Maz, again, is the level of personal support that Devin McCourty threw his way, which if Malcolm Butler was really a divisive, you know, malcontent, which we've heard that he's, you know, wasn't the best pro over the last year or two, and it sort of devolved with the contract, showing up late, not engaged, you know, playing on an island, peeking into the backfield to take chances for his stats. Like, if he had become a real detriment to the team in that fashion, I don't feel that guys like Tom Brady and Devin McCourty would be speaking so glowingly on a personal level about Malcolm Butler. So to me, that's significant, that guys like Brady and Devin McCourty, maybe the two most important guys on the team on either side of the ball, give him a personal endorsement. If Malcolm Butler were really screwing off, they would not support him on a personal level. They would not. And so I think that's important to know. And then that other thing, we knew all week he wasn't starting. How do you feel about that? Does that give you any insight into what might have happened?
So I think that between, you know, the quote-unquote illness and the bad practices, that they made a choice and that the reps went to Roe and we're going to start this way because we feel it's a better matchup, which I disagree with. But I can actually buy that part of the story. I still think Belichick is sticking it to the guy. But even McCourty said in his comment there, you know, I think he could have helped us as the game went along, and I'm paraphrasing. But so McCourty, again, another guy that's second-guessing Belichick publicly about the way he handled it during the game. And then on top of it, the comment he made at the end of all the rumors, and I don't know how that got out. And I think that's McCourty sort of saying, I don't know if the team's really trying to make this guy look bad. And I'm telling you, I think Belichick did damage in his locker room with this thing. And it's not fringe players. It's the Hightowers, the McCourtys, the Bradys who look at this and say, Bill, come on. You went too far on this one, Bill. You took it personally. You went too far, and you screwed us out of a championship, at least in their minds, whether it's true or not. I think Belichick has some mending to do in his own locker room with the key guys.
And And so, again, there are conflicting reports on it. Again, Eric Rowe says after the game, I didn't know till right before the game, and we had no idea. And I think Josina Anderson and ESPN quotes players in the locker room that said they had no idea. So maybe it was – I think Zoe has mentioned this. Maybe Bill let the captains know. You know, maybe the captains knew and not the rank-and-file locker room. So, you know, again, the answer there is somewhere in the middle. In fact, if Bill came into the week saying he's not starting, I actually have zero problem with that. I mean, if Malcolm Butler's play was down, he wasn't with the program, he was showing up late or, you know, just not fully engaged, and Bill made some sort of coaching decision about he's not ready to go, I'm not going to start him, I'm actually totally fine with that. I mean, I don't know if I agree with it, but okay. The issue remains when they can't stop anything and they can't stop Nick Foles, and you just mentioned it, McCourty said it. He could have helped us as the game went on. That's the issue.
Oh, totally. That's the issue. Another guy second-guessing the coach publicly. However slight that second guess is, you never see that come out of there. Never. Not that place. Not at that fortress.
Yeah, it's your team. You got every right in the world to not start him. But to not play one single defensive snap in that Super Bowl, the way that that game was going, it's inexcusable. And I'll never get over it.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.